May I have your attention, please?
Your attention, please?
May I have your attention, please?
May I have your attention, please?
This is Attention Please, your radio news magazine for the Northeast Olympic Peninsula. This is Steve Evans, and I will be your host this week. When I first visited Cindy Daly back in 2015, she and her husband, retired Port Townsend Police Chief Connor Daly, had pretty much given over all of their modest home and two-car garage on Park Ridge Road outside of town to the enterprise she calls Discovery Bird Rescue, a strictly volunteer effort to rehabilitate injured or sick wild birds, from hummingbirds to eagles, to either return them to the wild or, when that's not possible, to use them to educate the public about them. Back in 2015, there were aviaries and cages and incubators and freezers full of frozen rodents in every available corner of the house. Even the bathroom had been given over to a noisy family of fledgling Vox's swifts whose nest had fallen out of a chimney. Out back, they had constructed a giant makeshift enclosure where recovering injured eagles could practice flying again before having to try to make it on their own in the wild. I got myself invited back to Discovery Bird Rescue last week to take in the many improvements and developments that have taken place in the intervening years. I found Cindy in what was once the garage, but which is now the bird hospital. We walked through narrow pathways between bird cages, large and small.
You can see here it has grown quite a lot. So we have this area here where you first walk in, where people would come in and we meet them out in the driveway and to collect a bird. And then from there, you know, we use this space. This area here is going to be filled with baby birds very soon. And so when they start coming, we'll have this all set up where they'll be in baskets and in cages. And I've got a few people that are going to be starting new and coming down and helping feed baby birds this year. So I'm excited about that.
We're going to have new volunteers.
We're going to have a lot of new volunteers. And so that's exciting.
And where are you obtaining your volunteers?
Right here. So a lot of people who have gotten a hold of me during the COVID years who really couldn't come here because we were really limited in how we dealt with having a lot of people here.
Yeah.
So I kind of had them go into like transportation network. They helped collect birds and just drive them here from PA, Squim, Forks, wherever they were needing to be picked up from. So a lot of those people have been waiting a long time to get to come and do a little more hands-on type of volunteering. So they were the first people that I went to and asked if they would be interested. And most of them said, absolutely. So we've got new people coming in, and we'll get them trained up, and they'll get to have the experience of raising some young birds that people find every spring and summer that need attention. And so we do take in injured and orphaned young birds. They can be anything from baby hummingbirds to baby raptors. So that's exciting, and we always look forward to it in the spring. I always say, oh, I'm looking forward to it. As the season starts by August or September, I'm pretty well tired of it because they take a lot of work. So often the little baby passerine birds, like baby hummingbirds or baby songbirds, they need to be fed every 30 minutes. So it's a big commitment too. So you can see how exhausting that will be. But we always get the job done. And last year during that heat dome, we had over 50 swallows came in. So we were very busy feeding little swallow faces during that period. And it was hot. They were sweltering. We were sweltering. It was a very hard thing to do. But
so now you said that this garage here is the hospital?
Yes. So this is one of our hospitals. We've put a second building together that is also going to be used for housing recovering birds going on. And I'm going to take you down and show you that in a little bit. But up here, let me walk you around here. We have our lab area. So when birds do come in, we do fecals on them now. We check to see what kind of parasites they might have. We also can take blood and do lead testing. So whenever We have a raptor or a bird that we feel would might have lead in their system. We can test them for that. That machine was expensive but obtained through a grant. And so now we have the ability to do that. And when we know that a bird has lead, like an eagle or a swan, for example, we can start treatment for that right away.
Well, so really, what can you do for lead in the blood?
We're not sending it away to a lab, in other words, and waiting. Right. So it's a chelation that you use, a drug that goes into their system that helps to bind with the lead in the bloodstream and gets it eliminated. It can take a couple of months. In the case of lead, most people want to know how they obtain it. It's either through lead sinkers. Swans get it. Most swans have it. You know, they're dabbling down at the bottoms of ponds and things where those sinkers might be found in there.
And they're
ingesting them. And then the eagles eat the birds that have the lead, or they find a gut pile that has been left from someone who used lead shot on a deer or any other kind of, you know, game animal, and then they leave the guts behind where there's going to be, the lead shatters. It just goes everywhere, and it is going to be found in the remains, and that's how they ingest that, and that's how they end up with it in their bloodstream.
Do you commonly find lead in eagles? I mean, is it how
yeah,
often?
Yeah, we do typically find, most years we have found a lot of lead. This year I did mention, I think on our Facebook post recently, that we didn't have really any big lead issues this year. So I think, and I'm hoping, fingers crossed, that messaging is getting out there and people who hunt are switching from lead to some other types of ammunition. Yeah. Steel or copper or whatever it is they have. So it's a really important issue because even today, lead is still affecting the California condor recovery. I think that's the number one problem they're still having. So if we can eliminate that issue in this country, I think that would be really great.
Let's talk a little bit about some of the birds who are in here.
Okay, so around here, this is the actual in sort of intensive care area. And as you can see, I have a red-tailed hawk that did have a big issue with parasites. So again, we tested him for parasites, did a fecal on him. And he also had coccidia, which is kind of like giardia. You know, it's a protozoan in the water that makes them sick, or would make you sick if you drank the water from a stream. So same thing for the bird. Bird got really, really sick. And so the fact that he got coccidia and then having a heavy parasite load, you know, really brought him down. So we were able to treat both of those.
So you're capable of doing these diagnostics here? I mean, like,
right.
you diagnose, or are you a veterinarian?
No, but I do it enough that I've learned enough to be able to, you know, manage all of these things. But I do work with veterinarians very closely, and we're lucky to have Dr. Ginny Johnson and Dr. Joyce Murphy, who come here on a regular basis and help us in any way they can. And Dr. Murphy is an expert eye surgeon, so she really comes to look at these eyes that, you know, birds, raptors especially, get hit by cars a lot. So we see a lot of eye damage, eye injuries, and she's fabulous. So she helps a lot with those kinds of things. And Dr. Johnson as well, she just helps in general with everything. So they're great.
Do they do that pro bono?
They do. They come and do this all for free just to be of service to our wild friends here.
That's wonderful.
Yeah. So anyway, so that guy's getting well and recovering. You can see I have several rhinoceros auklets. I always have a few seabirds here. We live right here on the peninsula. The rhinoceros auklets over on Protection Island are, I guess, one of the biggest colonies in the world. So I'm always going to have some auklets coming in. They come in for various reasons. Most of the time, they're starving. You know, sometimes it's hard to find food out there. But they can also come in from injuries. So that might mean a predator has tried to pick them up and grab them and has damaged them in some way, or they've been hit maybe by a boat and they have a big slice in their body. So the big thing about seabirds, we really try to help them because they are having such a difficult time out there and they're disappearing fast. So we need to really pay attention to them. And when people find them on the beach, they just tend to want to put them back in the water because that seems like the natural inclination to do that. But in reality, if they're out of the water, and they shouldn't be, if they're laying on the beach, there's something wrong with them, and I need to get a hold of them and see what's going on with them. So that's what we want people to do. We want them to grab them and, you know, even throw a coat over them or whatever they happen to have. Stick them in a bag if you have to, because if you leave them there and you go home to call me or go somewhere else, chances are they're not going to be there when you go back. So best to get them right away so a predator doesn't come along and take them off the beach. So we all need to pitch in and help these guys, I think. I have a bald eagle here. We get a lot of bald eagles in right now at this time of year. This guy, right now they're all fighting. So they're looking for mates and nesting areas, and you know, eagles fight with each other over territory. So we get them coming in injured. This guy happened to be locked in combat and found on the ground in Port Townsend, and my young apprentice Joseph went out. He happened to be here all by himself. So he ran out there on his own by himself, separated the two of them, grabbed them both, and brought them both back here. So kind of an amazing story, and
injured?
He's an amazing kid. So they were both injured. They both had, you know, talon wounds. But this guy was the worst for the wear, and he actually had a bit of a spinal injury. He had a big wound on his leg, and so he hasn't been standing. So he hasn't been able to feed himself. So I'm just going to, while we're standing here talking, I'm going to feed him. He's gotten very used to this. It doesn't take him long to figure things out. He's hungry. They want to be fed. But when he was down on his stomach in Hawks, and he couldn't stand up, we had to hand feed him because he couldn't stand and hold the food under his feet and tear it apart on his own. So right now I'm just, for your listeners, I have a big bowl of cut up pieces of chicken, and it has lots of vitamins and other goodies already added to it. And I've just got a pair of big, long forceps, and I'm just handing the bird the chicken.
Why it's probably not a good idea for you to try and use your fingers for this. Because
and you can see that he was expecting it. He usually gets fed in the morning, but I thought you might like to see this. So this is, oh, come here. So this is just part of their recovery, make sure that they get fed and they stay healthy and strong while they're...
Quite a bit of chicken in a short period of time.
Yeah, they eat it fast, don't they?
Yeah.
So there you go. And then there's another bald eagle. We released the one that was fighting with him. This guy also was fighting. He has basically got a big scalp wound, so part of his scalp has been... you know, is showing because the skin was pulled back from there. So that's also healing, and we'll get him out when we can.
Now, are you also capable of, like, you know, sewing injuries up and doing that?
No,
sort
that's,
of work?
That's something that the veterinarians do for me. Okay. Yeah, that's considered a surgical procedure. So, they take care of that. And up above him, we have a long-tailed duck. And this guy came in, he was injured by a predator, probably had a little fractured wing, but we're getting him waterproof, which is something that we have to do with all the birds that go back in the cold waters here in the Northwest. So he has to get ready to do that. So we're going to see that he has that waterproofing that's so important. And as you can see, he's really a beautiful duck, isn't he?
Yes, he is. Those are beautiful
markings.
Yeah.
Love the way that he almost looks like, I don't know, but look at how that pattern in those feathers look. Isn't it pretty?
No, he's really gorgeous. So how do you go about waterproofing a duck?
Well, exactly. It's sort of a tedious process because we have to let them be in the water and then come out and encourage them to preen themselves so that they can zip those feathers back up and get them in good shape. So there's a couple of things we have to do. One, we have to keep them very clean so they're not sitting in their own feces. So when they are in something, they have to be kept up and kept clean and away from all of that.
Right. And so you've got them sitting up on a pillow and a towel.
Exactly. So we've got him up, and it makes them more comfortable too, because they're not laying on their keel, which is kind of sharp, and you know they're meant to float on the water, not lay on that bone. So he's up there for that reason, and then when he comes out of the water and he's all wet, I put them under a hair dryer, so human hair dryer, and they love it. And they get sort of addicted to it. It's kind of sad because I always feel bad that they're going to go out in that cold water and there's not going to be any hair dryers.
No hair dryers anymore.
Right. So anyway, but he's on his way to getting released. Okay, so I thought maybe we could go out a little. How about I just take you around and show you some of the other things that are going on here, and we can talk about them?
What do we have in here? This is a...
That is a little American kestrel female.
It is a kestrel.
Yep, and she is one of our ambassador birds. So I'm going to take you around and let you see some of our wonderful ambassador birds. That's why I'm wearing all this. I have a pocket full of mice and two different gloves on hanging off me.
Yes, you do.
And that is because we are really trying to gear up to having a lot more bird experiences here for people. So we're going to work on that, and you're going to see all the ways that we're developing that.
And birds become ambassador birds because for some reason they cannot be released into the wild again?
Right. So they all have their stories, and in particular this one was born with a problem. She has a little vertebrae in her neck that is just not lined up properly. So she was found as a little baby out of the nest in New Mexico. And she went to a vet hospital. They did x-rays. They figured out what the problem was and why she wasn't able to fly or take care of herself. And after much evaluation, it was decided that she would be best kept in captivity. And because she was so young, we decided that she would do well if we got her and started training and working with her right away.
Right.
Yeah, so she's one of our ambassador birds, and she sits on a glove. Most of the birds we train to sit on a glove and really be comfortable around people.
Which I guess is not a good thing for wild birds.
Right. That's the opposite of what we want to do with the ones that are going to return to the wild. So, yeah, we have two jobs here. We do the rehabilitation of wild birds, but we also want to do a lot of conservation education because we're in just... They kind of go hand in hand. We're in such a good position to talk to people and tell them what we see every day, you know, in the wild world. So, you know, we share that information. We want people to come and meet the birds and really experience them and understand what they're going through.
So how many years have you been doing this now?
Well, I've been at it for almost 40 years. But in this location, I think we've been here 13. So I've moved around a little bit. I started in New Mexico and then had a place here in Port Townsend early on. And then we moved out here to where we're our new location. And we've been here about 13 years. Do you remember the pools that we had, or have you ever seen
these? Well, I have seen these, but these, I think, came after the first time we talked, which was... I was trying to remember, and I was going to go
right
look it up.
It was right at the very beginning, it was 10 or 11 years ago.
I mean, you were still, like, working in your house, and, I mean, famously you had, like, I don't know, about a dozen, it seems like, Vox Swift fledglings, in your bathroom.
Right. Okay, so I'm going to introduce you, if you'd like to see. This is how we train and work with our ambassador birds, and this is... a red-tailed hawk that we have
here. So for our listeners, she's taking dead mice, out of her little pouch here and putting them in her glove.
So if you just kind of come in, Steve, and just shut that door. And we'll see if he'll come on over, even though... So if you want, you can describe it if you'd like. It's probably good for you to describe.
Yes, we have it's a red-tailed hawk here, I think. And, and he is just... leapt off of a perch and right onto Cindy's gloved hand and is busily, like, dismembering these mice. Happily.
So he can eat about four or five mice a day. And this guy was hit by a car. He lost a part of his wing. And so he was immediately, we realized his temperament worked with our ambassador type birds. We knew that he would be a good one to work with and train. He just had the right temperament for it. Very calm. Very,
was he young?
No, he was a mature adult red tail, but he's very food oriented. So, you know, when we came in, we just started asking him to step up on the glove and come to us for his food almost immediately, which he just got the hang of right away. So he's working out really well.
How long have you had him now?
So he's been here just about a year. Every now and then I give him a big fat rat, just kind of a an enhancement to his daily diet. So most of the time we feed him mice, but he also gets rats as well.
So you said that he's food oriented, but are not all like creatures food oriented?
Well, they kind of are, but you know, fear sometimes can take over. So, you know, do they really want food bad enough that they're willing to overcome the fear of you to come over and eat off your glove? And once you determine that, if they're really highly food oriented, a lot of them will just, you know,
they don't care.
They don't care. They just want to be fed. Right. So that's you know, a good indication that we could probably, you know, train that bird.
Yes.
And you can see that it was successful with him.
Yes.
Yeah, you got witness that.
He was not shy.
No. So let's see. We have some other birds here that I can talk about. There's Salem, our great horned owl female. And some of our, I call them ambassador birds, but she's really more of a surrogate bird here. So we have different jobs for different birds. And these are the ones that can't be released now. So remember that. She's got an injury to her shoulder and she can't fly. So what she does here at our center is she raises young baby owls, great horned owls. So you do have to stay species specific. So I can't put barn owls in with a great horned owl or she'll eat them. But we have barn owls for the baby barn owls. We have great horned owls for the baby great horned owls. We have a red tail hawk for the baby red tail hawks. So why is that important? To have a surrogate means that we can just take a young raptor and put it in with their own kind. So this means that they get all of the information that they need to be a red-tailed hawk or a great horned owl.
And she will take them under her wing, so to speak.
She will. So she will. We put them in as very youngsters, and they get fed by her, and they communicate with her, and they don't get too tame around us. We're not the ones that they're seeing being fed by every day. They're getting what they need naturally. And then they end up being ready for release. And, you know, we hunt train them, so we're going to provide them with some live prey. And they remain here until they have all of those things under their belt, so they're ready to go when they're released. And they'll be successful.
So let's talk a little bit about the pool over here, because, I mean, that was not here the last time we went through. And
sure. Right. So we have two pool areas. They're surrounded by enclosures, so they have 16 feet to move around in, but they also have 6-foot pools that they can get in. And we want them, of course, staying in that water, being waterproof, getting out, preening, and just getting ready for their release as well. So the birds that you saw that were in the surgical area or the treatment area eventually are going to move outside where they need to be. So that's just one more step to getting them released. Over here, I just wanted to give you, this is like the next phase that we're
working on. I see an addition going on to this barn structure.
Lots of additions. So that's going to be a flight. Those are flights that are going to be going out of the barn. So the indoor three stalls have been turned into giant, basically, bird cages. But they're going to be able to be inside or once we swing open those doors, they can go outside as well. So they're going to be attached to all that. And then in the middle here, there's going to be a stage where we can do bird programs so people can come out. We're going to have a bunch of picnic tables out here, and people can sit, and we'll come out with some of the live birds and do programs. And then all along this fencing, we're putting in all new caging for all our ambassador birds so that they'll be really close here.
Now, how are you financing all of this? I mean, how are you supported?
Most of the time it's through public donations and some grants. So between the two things, I'm managed to make all of this happen.
Wow. So do you have like grantors who sort of consistently give to you year after year reliably?
Yeah, I would say our biggest one is the through the vanity license plates that people can buy, the eco mm-hmm. license plates. So much of that money goes to help wildlife, and we can access some of that through grant writing. So I would say the Washington State Fish and Wildlife are the ones that help me out the most as far as grants go. And then public donations. And our community has been extremely supportive.
Do you have to be licensed and certified or something to do this?
You do.
Service.
You do. So I have two permits. I have several permits, but I have a permit to do education work. I have a permit to be a rehabilitator, as well as I have a permit to have eagles. So I have to certify and get CE credits every year. And so I continually go to training and seminars myself as well. Yeah.
And I heard you say at the beginning that you have a bunch of new volunteers coming in. So are you full up on volunteers right now? Or
yeah, I think if they're really interested, they should visit our website. And there is a volunteer form they can fill out and just send that in to me. Right now it says, you know, transportation and fundraising. But that's a good way to get started and for us to get to know you. And then we go from there. So.
Okay. And suppose we should really put your phone number out on the air here so that people, if they find birds in distress, they can contact you.
Sure. So it's 360-379-0802. If you find an injured bird, try to get it picked up and put in a box and keep it warm and dark and quiet. And because those are that's the first treatment for shock, and the bird is going to be in shock. And then get a hold of us and we'll see what we can do to get it here.
The tour of the facilities lasted more than an hour. In the barn, Cindy proudly showed off the brand new surgery with its own x-ray machine, surgery table, and anesthetization station, where visiting vets can perform operations without needing to transport the birds. Behind the barn, we wandered through a small village of new outdoor cedar slat-sided bird enclosures along lanes with names like Park Ridge Flyway and Eagle Alley. The funky eagle flight I had seen in 2015 collapsed in the snowpocalypse of 2019 and had been replaced with a new fabric-covered steel tube structure with cedar slat siding that stands an impressive 18 feet high by 100 feet long and 36 feet wide. Daly remarked with real pride that there are no longer any birds living inside her house. Asked about her work schedule, she told me that she has worked for up to 12 hours a day, 7 days a week, for no pay for more years than she can remember, although she and Connor did finally take a 2-week vacation in early March. Asked if she had any requests of the community, she said this.
Oh, I have a favor to ask. I have an opportunity to have a young girl come. She's just graduated from college, and she can come here and be an intern here. She's studying birds and reptiles and has a biology degree, and she's now a graduate student. And she needs a place to stay. So I want her to stay here on the property. So I thought I had this crazy idea, and I thought I'd ask if any of the listeners have an extra, like an RV or some little camper or something, maybe we could park it here for just the summer months this summer. So she would have a place to just stay on the property here and help every day with all of this work.
You heard that request? So once again, you can call Cindy Daly at
360-379-0802.
With Cindy Daly of Discovery Bird Rescue, this is Steve Evans for KPTZ Community Radio News.
May I have your attention, please?
May I have your attention, please?
¶¶